topic of today is the challenge of applying microfluidics to the biomedical applications. My background is in fluid mechanics. I just spent several decades to work on turbulence, and which is a field and quite challenging, quite exciting, but I don't think we can really understand the field for another few thousand years. So I decided to try to pretend, try to move into other areas, and so we get more and more into becoming in the biomedical applications. And this is also a lot of very interesting fluidics problems, because in a lot of biomedical applications, we try to move the fluids or move the particles in the fluids. And but the challenge is that the molecule we work with or the particle we work with is much more complicated than the, in the past when I work in turbulence area, because in turbulence area is very simple fluids like a gas or liquid. And so it's quite a different type of challenge, and I don't think this also is a field for a few thousand years before we can really say we can understand it. And I remember I graduated from Johns Hopkins, and Johns Hopkins at that time was one of the best group in turbulence. I still remember the first sentence I sit in my first turbulence class, and the professor is Stan Corson, and I think a lot of people influence know Stan Corson. He's a giant in that area. The first sentence he said, congratulations, and you guys entering into the area which you were never afraid to lose your job, because this field will never be solved. Actually, I think all the people in turbulence lost jobs because it's not the people solve the problem, it's because funding is here. Okay, anyway, so microfluidics. Yeah, so we started working on the microfluidics about more than 10 years ago, and at that time, we get one of the first three projects in from DARPA trying to ask us to do biomedical diagnosis, the biowarfare agent detection. And so they want us to put the detection system into a handheld device. And obviously, we have to work in shrink the scale of the fluids. And so that's why we're getting microfluidics and we're getting a biomedical application. CMIS is an institute supported by NASA, called the Cell Mimetic Space Exploration. Basically, we try to understand the cells. The task they give to us, try to fuse the bio-nano information all together. So cell is one of the model systems you really put all these things together. And because of found by NASA, so somewhat related to space exploration, that's how the name come out. And if you wanted to, there's about 15 faculty members and about 50 to 70 student, graduate students, postdoc involved that, so you can see a lot of things what we have done in this institute. And that's my lab website. And so welcome to visit us on the two websites. Before I start to talk, and I really have to express my gratitude to a group, large group of faculty members who worked in the past 10 or 15 years. And especially, it's really a privilege to work with a group of young researchers. And I always feel sometimes I don't know who is the professor, who is the student. My background is turbulence, and I work in biology, so I learn biology from my students. And they're really smart, and really a privilege to work with this group. Of course, we appreciate the financial support from all the funding agencies. Talk about the fluids. Fluids, really, we talk about fluid mechanics. Of fluidics, we really talk about moving, how do we move fluids and embed the particles in an efficient way, and also we'll make it happen, especially in the small scales. In small scale segment, it's not that easy to move. And in the past, when we work about a large scale fluid mechanics, most application for mechanical, aerospace, and the chemical industry, and F equal to MA, the problem is on the left-hand side is A, because the in large scales, inertial force is inertial force dominates, and when inertial dominates, and so the equation is nonlinear, and when it's nonlinear, then how do we handle all these problems? And however, and most time we work with very simple molecules, air or water or some simple molecules. And one thing we have spent a lot of time to work on at the surface is sleep or non-sleep. Because when it sleeps, and the viscous drag will be less, and then the power requirement is less. if you look from the application point of view and from the theoretical point of view, there's a lot of interest in how to try to understand how this molecule interact with the surface. When you go to small scales, and most of the application areas for the biomedical application, how do we use that in the for the medical diagnosis or for the drug delivery or for the drug screening process? And look from equation point of view, and the problem there is not there anymore, because in highly viscous fluid, in the inertial force, viscous force dominating, so inertial force almost equal to zero. And but we cannot use inertial. We use inertial, most time we use inertial force or the hydrodynamic pressure force to drive. And here, the hydrodynamic pressure force is not a convenient force to use. And so we have to start to use different kind of forces to drive the fluids. And another thing is the intermolecular force become quite important part of the whole governing equation. And so the force become a challenge. And perhaps the most challenge is the molecule changes. When the molecule changes, and it's so complicated, and how do we handle that? And when you go to small scales, surface to volume ratio becomes so large, and the surface and fluid molecule interaction become important. So these are the challenges we're facing. And how do we handle these problems and such that we'll be able to do biomedical diagnosis or to do other things more efficiently and or even to make the device working? So these are the things we need to fix. So that's in the traditional simple molecules. For simple molecule flows, all the physical constants lumped into one constant, which is the viscosity. Okay? For simple fluids, the 81 coefficient, we can simplify into one coefficient. And that's really amazing and it works very well. And there's another thing what amazing works well, is there's no sleep. And then, so we need to worry about this term. That's in the traditional fluids. And then the surface condition that works a lot in two-phase flows in large scales. And how does interface, whether the interface, you can model that with what type of conditions in order to get accurate predictions. And so non-slip, because it's a diffuse reflection, the tangential moment is equal to zero. And otherwise, and the flow has a slip. But in reality, flow always slip. Okay, it's just a large or small. But you can measure it or cannot measure it. You can see it or you cannot see it. So this is the issue. And so that was our first microfluidics project, and that happens about more than 15 years ago. And we made a channel. This channel is about 1 micron in thickness and about 4 millimeter in length. And then they have pressure sensors distributed along this channel. It's really amazing. And that was done by Professor Yu-Chung Tai at Caltech. He is the one of the founding fathers of MEMS technology. And he made it, and we did the measurements. And when we put a different type of gas through this micro channel, and we can change the Nusselt number in a wide range. And then we measure pressure distribution. If we assume there's no slip, and the deviation from the theoretical calculated pressure from the experimental data start to deviate at some point here. If we go back to find out the Nusselt number is about 0.14. Yes?
Could you remind me what the Nusselt number is?
Nusselt number is the mean free path of the gas compared to the size of the channel. Okay. Most of the time it's the shortest distance of the channel. So that means whether the gas is rarefied or not rarefied. And so this is the Nusselt number. So start to deviate at that point, and if you check the Nusselt number, then it's 0.14. That's exactly the we know it should start to deviate from the surface slip in a very large scale fluid mechanics. Basically, it's in a rarefied gas, happens in the reentry vehicles. So in the reentry vehicles, there's a huge size fluid mechanics, and the non-slip start to deviate 0.14, and into micro channels also start to deviate 0.14. In other words, it works in microfluidics, working in the And the reason is very simple, because that we deal with the molecule on the surface, and the molecule is very simple. So there's not much deviation. If we assume the sleep condition, you can see the prediction in the measure data very well. So the problem is, if United Scales is not a problem for the surface sleep or not sleep, it's really can you see the sleep or not? Can you measure the sleep or not? And we usually use a sleep length. That means if we extrapolate the velocity profile to zero and how much is the length, we use that to indicate how large is the sleep. And in a simple channel flow field, and if you measure the flow rate and to measure the pressure drop, and then in order to see the deviation from the non-sleep condition from the real measure of the data, and the data will depend on L over H. H is the height. So in microchannels, this H has to be very small in order to be able to see the delta Q. Even very large, you don't see the delta Q, and so you think the flow is sleep. So we have to go down to about half a micron, then we are able to measure that. Okay, so go to less than half micron channel, we'll be able to measure the delta Q and then measure, say, the flow start to sleep and how much is the sleep length. We measure that is after about 6 years of hard working of a very, very, very good student. If I don't have that student, we will never be able to reach the point. The reason for that, very hard to measure delta Q, very hard to measure delta P. These are the two quantities so trivial to measure in channel flows, large channel, but when you go to that small scale, it's very, very hard. Okay. The harder problem is in order to see that, you have to make the surface molecularly smooth, really molecularly smooth, otherwise you will not see that. The data just go away. Another thing, a stupid problem, leakage. Okay, and the channel that small scale is very hard to make with no leakage, especially you have to drive at a very high pressure. And that leakage may be much more than the delta. Another thing is, how do you measure the height of that channel to high accuracy? Because the height is to few the delta Q, sorry, the delta P is a few order of is proportional to the height to third or fourth power. Okay. So small difference in the height measurements and it can make the problem not right. So he did it. It's really amazing for such a simple experiment for 6 years. And then another thing he did, very, very interesting. Even for simple fluids, he did that in different type of simple molecules. The sleep length is a function of shear rate. When you go to higher shear rate, the surface, the sleep length become larger and larger. That's physically quite reasonable. And also very much depends on the surface conditions. If the surface condition, let's take a hydrophobic and a hydrophobic case, and that water is a very polar molecule, and hexadecan is a nonpolar molecule. Okay, so if you take a hydrophobic surface and you take two molecules, one is polar, one is nonpolar, and then you can see the surface sleep are very different. Even for fairly simple fluids, and the molecular structure and make a big difference. And if you change the surface molecule from hydrophobic and to hydrophobic to hydrophilic, if you compare these two, the surface condition change and the sleep condition also change. Okay. So, yes?
Yeah, just looking at those two molecules, the hexadecan is obviously bigger.
It's much larger.
And so the molecular scale, could we see some alignment in that region?
No, because it's much larger, but however, it's still very small compared to the size of the channel. Yeah. And also, you can from these things, you can see really it's a polar and non-polar structure.
So
because
it's 2 nanometers, the size of the molecule,
yes.
The 2 nanometers, and you're dealing with an order of magnitude molecule.
Yeah, the channel size in this case is about half micron or 1 micron.
So when do you start to see molecular alignment set?
Okay, that's great. You mean the size of the molecule become appreciable to the size of the channel? And And that was one of the things I asked him to do at the beginning of the thesis, and the final was no way we can do that. Okay, the reason for that is that that means you have to go to the, usually you start to see the size of the molecule start to affect the whole thing. It's about a 10, the height of the channel has to be about 10 layers of the size of molecule. So if about 2 nanometers, you're about 20 nanometers height. Okay, and that, we just cannot get a conclusive result for that kind of size of the channel. Yes?
In that connection, did you ever try liquid crystals?
No, we never tried liquid crystals. Yeah. Okay, so. So this, I just want to show you an example. For relatively simple molecules, and we talk about one simple part of the problem, which is surface slip situation, and it's a tough challenge. But there's a lot of work that's been done for the last few years and started to shape a lot of light and to understand that. But when we go to biomedical application, and the order of magnitude difficulty starts to show up is because the working medium start changing. We start interested in DNA, we start interested in proteins and polymers, or even cells inside of the small channels. Okay. And this start to make the microfluidics even more challenging or more exciting, and there's a lot of room for us to do. And also, we can almost, we'll never lose our jobs, so like Professor Korsen said. We, no matter what, we handle these complex fluids, and we need to make a device to be able to move the fluids from one place to another place. Okay. Think about all the applications we need to do for that. Okay. And also in very small, in a very small volume, in a very small size. So first of all, we start with is we use a traditional thing to make pumps and valves, use hydrodynamic pressure to drive the fluid. Because when you go to small size, if you say 1 micron channel and a few millimeters, the pressure drop is 1,000 psi. How can we make a pump, a microscale pump, deliver 1,000 psi? And when you make it, and how can you make the system can sustain 1,000 psi without leakage? Okay. And it's a really big challenge. And each one again, he's a person, he can make anything. He made everything. Okay. He made all these pumps and the valves and the different sensors, and it can measure the flow rate, can measure to the high accuracy, and really piece them off. And why do we go through all this trouble? We know that there will be high pressure drop. The one of the things you will see when we start to drive these complex fluids, and most of the time these complex fluids is not the medium, is a highly ionic medium. And the other ways to drive the fluid is by electrokinetic force, by the surface tension, which I will show you examples. And all that is very hard to operate if the medium has high ionic concentration. Okay, but all the biomedical applications has that. The cell has to live in the medium as high ionic concentration. That's why we still need hydrodynamic pressure devices, like what you have seen here, and in order to accomplish some of the operations, though the challenge is very high, very high. Electrokinetic force-driven fluids, that relieve all the problems we just said for hydrodynamic pressures. We do not need a complex pump, okay, and we do not need a complex valve, and we are not facing the high pressure drop problems because we move the particles. And a very simple actuator, just electrode. You put the electrode in micro device and you turn on and off, and then you can move all these fluids. And also there are many choice of forces you can use for charge or for the polarized particle. Polarized particle like DP force, etc. And however, it only works in a very low ionic fluid. If ionic concentration goes to a little bit above, then it doesn't work very well, especially for many different polarized particles. For charged particles, osmotic force is okay. And also, it's only working a very thin layer above the electrode. If you want to go above, say, a few hundred microns above the surface, it wouldn't work very well. other constraint. And the real constraint is this, because in biomedical applications, most of the fluids block urine, saliva, all very high on the ionic constraint is higher than that. So, for example, one example we use, if we wanted to make the force field become effective above the surface, and one of that application, one of the force is AC electroosmotic force, and which is pretty simple. And we put three electrodes, okay, and for three electrodes, and this positive and negative, the field going this way. And because the electrode double layer, so you have more the positive ion at here, and less, so the positive ion will move into this direction, the force in that along that direction. When you start to change the field, and the field reversed, and the charge also reversed, so the force also going this way. So you end up with the force to move these particles always from outside toward the center, and when you toward the center, and as you go upward. When you go upward, that the mass conservation with the upward flow can extend for several hundred microns, and that can extend the driving of the fluids to much larger away from the surface. And the reason we want to do that is because we want to concentrate the cells or molecules into the center of a sensor. And the concentration is one of the fundamental fluid processes we need. Concentration, separation, mixing, and all these other fundamental processes we need to be able to make it into small scale. And the concentration is one of them because you can increase the signal level. Use these things, we are able to put a droplet usually is several hundred microns, and can put all the cells in that and be attracted into the surface by using AC electroosmotic concentrators. For small particles, there's a problem. Because when you work out this, and it's really is volume dependent, the volume of the size of the particle one move. And when you go to small size, like we are able to go down to about 3 nanoliters of DNA. And that's really a world record. Okay. And also, it's not just by AC electroosmotic force. We have to combine three different electrokinetic force, and such that we'll be able to handle 3 nanometer the DNA fragment. Now here is a dielectrophoretic force, then we need a biased AC electroosmotic force. And then there's another force that we still don't know. Okay, we look into all the possibilities to explain, and we don't know why there's another force which we never found, and we don't know how far that electrostatic force, but that's one of the necessary force field in order to move these small particles into the center. And after we get into the center, and if our sensor is at a point, and you can significantly increase the signal level. Okay. What about your medical diagnosis? And we want to go to very low concentration, and that means the signal to noise ratio has to be very high, so we can go to smaller and smaller concentration. Like now in the laboratory, typically we can go to femtomolars or 0.1 femtomolars. When you go to that small scale, signal is an issue, and the signal we can use various ways to do the concentration, bring all the signal molecule into the sensor point. But the real challenge is not a signal, it's noise. And the noise is a surface property. Okay, so we're going to spend a lot of time talking about how to handle the surface property, and the surface flow and the surface interaction. And then if we cannot handle surface property very well, and the noise is very high, and when noise is very high, and then the concentration, you cannot detect a very low concentration target. So this is one thing to help to increase the signal. Okay. And so we talk about the use of hydrodynamic pressure to drive the fluid, and we talk about the use of EK force to drive the fluid. EK force has been studied for a very, very long time. And CJ Kim is a faculty member in our department. And he really revolutionized the microfluidics area. And what he did is use a surface tension. have the fluids. And the surface tension is the surface electric potential to the second power. So rather than to make the complex pump and valve, or using electrode to do electrokinetic force driving, and he drive the fluids in a digital way rather than a continuous stream. So he put electrode on the surface, and he changes surface potential. When surface potential is not the same along the path, and the surface tension is not balanced, so he can drive the fluids from one point to another point and stop at the point when you make a potential the same and stop it. And he can put the two droplets merge together and do mixing and separate and move to another position. So he can use a very simple concept and to drive the fluids by using surface tension. Okay, so that's a real experiment. And he has spent about 6-7 years working on that and really perfect a lot of things. And one thing is still not perfect yet is the surface. When we work in the microfluidics, you will find out that the surface is the main challenge. As your surface interact with the complex molecule is the main challenge. Yes?
Just one quick comment. There's going to be a poster at the poster session this evening at the workshop about this particular project.
Sure.
Shen Wei Lu is going to present a poster.
Okay, so why the problem on the surface is a challenge? By doing that, it's mostly for biomedical applications. For biomedical applications, and we want to transport the proteins or transport the DNA from one place to another place, and then try to mix with the reagents, and then go to another place, and et cetera, et cetera. So there's acid we have to carry out. These molecules, and if you move these droplets along the path, and then may leave a trace. If you leave a trace, you mess up this action. And then you will make your next step operation will not be reliable. Okay. And so how can you make sure there's no trace left on the surface? And how do you treat the surface? And these are the challenges which is facing for the last few years. DNA or protein is not too bad, but DNA or RNA is not too bad. Protein is really bad. Okay. So we still talk about another way to move that. Ming Wu was a faculty in our electrical engineering. Now he's an expatriate, and he moved to Berkeley. It's a big loss for us. And he's still a member of CMIS. And one day he come to our monthly review meeting and show us a device. Okay, and we all work in the MEMS device, the MEMS field for about 15 years together. So he comes to say, okay, let me show you a device which you made. How do we move cells or small particles? So that's a conveyor belt, and you can see in each each of these cells has one small particle. It can be real cell, it can be a particle that move, and then the turbine moves upward, and then move to the, and use conveyor belt to move to other locations. And also he showed a lot of movies, and with a filter, and then the filter moving passed by, the small cell passing, and the big cell was cannot pass. So you can filter out the large cells or small cells. So we see that, that's a nice piece, micro machine, and it takes about one PhD thesis to make it, and 5 years. He said, no, this is not a micro machine. He said, this is optics. That really make us just completely surprised. Okay. So it's a movie. So it's a movie moving real subject. Okay. So what he did? He take a piece of material which is photosensitive. Then he used a light to draw a circle. When you draw a circle, and this is the working fluids. On top of that, and at the bottom of that, and there has two electrodes. So you use AC voltage to drive it. So he used this light to draw a circle because this material is photosensitive. So this circle becomes an electrode, and it's a virtual electrode. It's a light-made electrode. Okay. Then he used the AC field to drive that, and then driving a negative DP force. then if he next instant he moved this circle to another location, and he will take this molecule, take this particle with him. Okay, so it's like a cage, and this particle, and then he moved the cage away, and he moved the particle along with it. And so that's how he made this movie, and you drive all this force in the negative DP force area, so you can move this particle cell to any location. Yes?
Was the movie when you showed it, or not like it, you know, or was that, you know, it kind of goes, it jumps? Is it like that? Is it?
Now this one is, he's making a cartoon.
Right. Are you saying when you're playing the movie right now? How long is the actual movie?
This action movie. It's not in a loop.
It's not in a loop.
It's not in a loop. Okay. And so basically he used this, a movie to make a real, moving a real subject. Okay. And to make a moving micro machine, and everybody knows that's a very tough process because you have to overcome surface frictional forces there. By doing that, it doesn't have all these problems. And also very, very low power. It's about 100,000 times less than typical optical trees. And he used this force to do it. And he can make a lot of cell arrays. Each one dot is a cell array. And he can move these cells as particles in any location or he just hold it there. Okay. Now he already can make about 100,000 cells, hold 100,000 cells in one place. And you can move the cell if you want. That's really amazing. Yes?
So the optical power that's used to create this device is not something that will damage the cells?
No, that's the point. Use optical tracer. Optical is tracer because you use optical pressure. You need very high power to do that. And most of the time the cell is damaged. And he only needs about 100,000 less than optical tracer. So there's no problem about the damage of the cells. And again, that's a really powerful thing, but again, it's a DP force. So this cannot be operated in low ionic concentration. So now we are struggling, that is, because we do want to use that to working on the cells. Okay, so now we're struggling, how do we handle that? And it's a progress very fast by changing the designs, changing the different materials, and we're closing to that stage. So you can see that many different, we need to drive the fluid. We need to drive fluids, there are many ways to drive the fluids, but the challenge is each of that has its own limitation. Okay? And but there are ways to do that. So we drive the fluids, and now we can concentrate the particles, molecules to get a signal. And we already talked about, and in many places, surface is one major issue. Typically, we make a nice microfluidic device and right out from the clean room facility, very nice, beautifully working the fluid, the micro devices. 10 minutes later, it's completely messed up. Or less than 10 minutes later, it's completely messed up. When you mess up, this is messed up, you know it's messed up. And most of the time, you don't know it's messed up because if you mess up by hard molecules, okay, you don't see it, but it doesn't work. And that's my students struggles, still now struggles almost every day. We make a sensor, and the sensor's data, today's data is different from yesterday's data. Yeah. And make an actuator, and yesterday it works nicely, and today it doesn't work. Yeah. And we develop many ways to do that, try to handle the surface, try to code different surface with different molecules. And like this one case, and we do the surface molecule control even after 30 hours, and it's still very clean, nice. And how, what kind of molecule we need to use, and how long it can last, and what is the efficiency, and how do we bring these molecules onto the surface at the location which we want it to be. It's not easy, because after we make the channel to seal. Okay? And how do you bring that the surface control molecule to the surface, the location, and how do we do it, and how do you treat that such that it works function properly. And these are all the challenges we are facing. And sometimes I want the surface property change during the operation. I make one step process, and next step I want to change it. Sometimes I want hydrophobic, and sometimes I need hydrophilic. And also there are many ways we try to do that. We reconfigure for the surface, make the surface go from hydrophobic and to hydrophilic and come back, etc. And this is one example of what we did. Okay, we work with material scientists, and then we can from hydrophobic and get to hydrophilic. And then we coat with PAC. After we coat with PAC, and the protein will not stuck onto the surface. That's what we want. And later on, we want at the same location, want the protein stuck onto the surface of the texture protein. So these are the things we, that means we need to be able to switch the surface from one way to another way, not switch back and etc. We go back and forth. Okay, and it's possible to do that. And we did that by using hydrodynamic ways. That means we bring the fluids, go there to change the surface from hydrophobic to hydrophilic. But that's not what exactly we would like to have. Because by doing that, we need to bring the fluids, go to that location to wash out, to clean with another different fluid. So it's to bring fluids inside microorganism is always complicated. Can we do it by electropotential? Okay, yes. And this one very nice work done at the UCSB. Now what they did is they put a molecule on the surface, and then the molecule has a head. And if you change the potential, the head will go back, approach to the surface or lift up. And by doing that, you can change the surface to hydrophobic or hydrophilic. So you can change the surface properties not by driving fluids through and by using surface protection. So these are all the tricks we need to use in order to do the biomedical application. And there's also a lot of optical application depends on fluids and the surface interaction. And this is a polymer, an organic polymer done by Professor Yang Yang's lab. You can see he's very romantic. And so he's one of the best labs in the country to do organic emitting thin film. Okay. And one process is a very fluid mechanics dominant process. If the concentration of this polymer is very low, and you spin onto the surface, spin on it, you rotate this substrate and at a high RPM, and it'll, this molecule spins straightened and put on the surface. If high concentration, and it was straightened and also stay on the surface. But if you can control the concentration in a medium way, and it depends on the spinning speed, and you can go either ways. When you go either ways, and there's a range of operation, and he can change like a low RPM or high RPM, he can change the light emitting property according to the rotating speed of the disk. That means rotate depends on the shear flow on the top and drive the thin film on the surface. And then you can make the light emitting at the different colors. Okay. And that's one of the processes which we use that, for example, like our cell phones as color screen. Okay. And that's one of the processes to change the organic thin film of these polymers and has different colors. And how do we do that? It's by using the flow field, the shear stress on the surface, and stretch these molecules in a different way, and we can get a different colors. And the people know a lot, I believe, that here is the surface has a lot to do with the effect of the affect the cells on the surface. That was the work we did a few years ago with one of my MD PhD student. He's a cardiologist and now he's a professor at USC. And we put endothelium cells on the surface, then we apply a controlled surface shear stress. Or a controlled surface shear stress, and that surface shear stress will affect the mechanical sensors on these cells, and then make an expression of the, like in this case, MCP1 RNA be very different, and you can change the surface receptors, and it will change the attraction of the monocyte. And that can cause the, we use that to study how does the plaque build up in the blood vessel. So that means how does the surface flow and the surface stress and how does surface stress affect the mechanical sensors on the cell, and then the cell can express different way and completely change the surface condition after channel. And even before we do that, before we study all this, the surface receptors, and you can see the geometry of the cell changes. And that means the boundary condition changes with time, and it changes very, very long time. Takes 20 hours to settle down. So if we really want to model that, a lot of the properties have changes happens in a very short time, and some of that takes 18 hours, 20 hours. So when you model a problem with a multiple time scale and a multiple time length scale, and how do you model that problem? Okay. And also most of that is continuous. It's not a discrete time scale, which are very different, so you can separate. Or different length scale is very separate, and you can separate that. And most of this biological phenomena is a continuous time scale and spread in a continuous length scale. So this is another challenge we need to face. Okay, so now let's talk about the surface. We already see a lot of problems with the surface, or a lot of challenges in the surface. And by control the surface property right, and we will be able to get a lot of things which we want to have. Okay. For chemists, has developed many ways to control the surface. And for example, like for us, we are users. We are users of the surface property. And one thing we are very much interested in, we want to develop a DNA sensor or RNA sensor at a very, very high sensitivity. And that means we need to make the surface noise drop to very, very low. When you make the surface noise very low, that means how do you treat the surface and all these surface molecules can behave or can be sit there in a very organized way, and such that you can make the external molecule the non-specific binding to a very low level. Okay. And one way is you do the self-assembly, another way is use LB films. LB films actually is a very interesting fluid mechanics process. Okay. It handles one single layer of molecule on the water surface, and then you transfer that to a substrate, and then you try to make, and then use the substrate to make other things which you like to do. So how do you handle one molecule on the surface? And it's a well-established technique, but from fluid mechanics point of view, and there's a lot of things which we still don't know how to do that. So on the surface, what is LB film? Basically, we put a molecule, one side is hydrophobic, another side is hydrophilic. Okay? And so we spread onto the surface. And when we started with a very low concentration, and the people working in this area called the gas phase, actually it's just the molecule spread far away. Then you put two barriers, and you push the two barriers closer and closer. So when it's closer and closer, and this molecule becomes closer and reach to the liquid phase. So because the molecule is so close, and they start to know each other, there's another molecule around. You put push it further close, and then call the liquid condensed form. And in this case, all these molecules stand up, hydrophilic and hydrophobic end, like this. Okay. And this a range of things. Because when you stand it up, and you want to squash as much as you can, so this molecule really stand up very straight and very tight. And when you put onto the surface, and you will not have other molecules were stuck across the surface and start to talk to the surface, that is possible noise. So you push the closer and closer and closer. When you close to that point, then it will start to fall and collapse. How do we know that's the place which we need, and why? What is the mechanism to start to trip the fault? Let me show. This is what we measured from using an air and measured point. There's a gas phase and the liquid phase, and these are the place which we like. And then problem starts, okay, making folks. So somewhere around here, problem will happen.
What is the molecule?
Okay. When we do this, because we pick up a molecule which is one side is hydrophobic and the other one is hydrophilic. I will show you one. Like one we use for the text.
The molecules
there
are what? Can't quite see that. Is it like 500 square?
Centimeter square.
Centimeter.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter because centimeter square basically shows the trough.
So
it's
not
per molecule. No, it's not. Actually, we did that I don't have the data here. We did that how many molecules per area. That's a better way.
That's the more traditional way of
that's fine. That's the audio way to do it, but later on we try to express how many modifiers, and that's much better way to express that. So the key point is who is that point and how that point started.
Okay.
Because we want to control that point so that we can make the molecule.
But is this a lipid or a polymer or what is it?
I mean, this molecule. Okay. The one we did the experiment is called a rotaxin. Rotaxin is artificial molecule. And it's not a, it's organic molecule and it has a very compact molecule. It's not a lipid, it's not a.
Okay.
Okay. We'll discuss that later. No, we'll show that. Okay, so reach that point. When you push, and then you'll fold, and the loop, how does it look like? It's a very dynamic process, okay? And you can see these folds together. But what we want to do is we want to understand how the folds started, what happened before that,
How do you image that?
Huh?
How is that image?
The image is called a bomb. It's a light scatter.
Oh, okay.
Okay, from the surface. So look from and see the scattering part.
Okay.
What perspective are we looking at in the
mirror? Okay. This is a water trough, okay? And so we send the light from the side and we have to see the scatter light. And so these are the scatter light. And the scatter light, you see these are the folds start up and then how the fold move around. And we wanted to understand that process, how the fold started and how can we prevent it that start until we can do the best. And the postdoc worked on that. He never finished the project, but one thing he found out is very interesting. When the fold triggers, originally it's very uniform surface because all the molecules pretty well stand up. And it was triggered by a dislocation, and that dislocation started propagating like a soliton. Okay? And that soliton started move and trigger all this fold. Okay? So for people really working in the fluids, and then you start to see, hey, there's a lot of very interesting nonlinear phenomena happening at that point. Okay, so how can you prevent this dislocation happening, and why does the soliton start to trigger? That's something quite exciting. So why do we want to do all this? Yes.
How is the flow direction related to the concentration
direction? Okay, and that is depends on how much your initial concentration. Okay, and usually it's fairly large. About a factor of 10.
Your phone showing this way and your beauty. Are you compressing it this way or are you compressing it this way?
It's not correlated.
It's not
really correlated when the dislocation happens and how does propagation speed up the solid. Okay. And the propagation direction of the solid. And that's how to trigger all this. Okay, the reason why I do that is because we wanted to make a molecular muscle. And so a molecular muscle is a molecule which is developed by Fraser Stoddart in our chemistry department. And this molecule has several recognition sites, and this ring can move from here to there, depends on the energy provided into that. And if we can put all this molecule, one single layer molecule, onto this microscale cantilever beam, and we calculate that, and we can get a very large force. Okay, so the actuation density, we can get a very large strength. Okay, these are the range we want to go to further and further in that direction. And so this molecular muscle can be higher than nature muscle, higher than the electrostatic actuators, etc., etc. That's why we wanted to do that. And so let me show you a. So you take the electron out, and this ring will move to the red, put the electron back, and it will move to this green location. The reason for that, when you build this molecule has two potential wells. And then you put the electron in there, and then you change the potential field and become high point, it's unstable, and then this ring will move to the another well. Okay, and when you put the molecule back, take the electron out, and then it'll go backward. So that was designed, and that was tested in the test tube, and it works there. And now we want to put all these molecules by using the LB film, put on the surface, and put it very tight. because we want to get a very high large force out of it. And if we put it very tight, will this ring still move up and down? If it doesn't move up and down, we will not get a molecular muscle. Okay? And so we have to put all this onto the surface, and we'll be able to measure to prove it still move up and down. So how do we do that? We use called XPS machine, instrument to do that. It works. It's if I put X-ray, a certain energy X-ray, I kick out the electron. When we kick out the electron, if it works, the ring will move up. When the ring will move up, will give you a high amplitude signal. That means the ring really moves because when it moves up to the surface. So we put all this by using LD film, we put all these molecules stand on the surface, and then we take this into the XPS, then we put the oxidant onto the surface. Nothing come up. Okay. So it shows it doesn't work. And one of my student work on this extremely small. He said, no, it will not work. Why it will not work? Because the upper part of the molecule is hydrophobic. Once hydrophobic, the oxidant in the water cannot penetrate. Once it cannot penetrate, will not oxidize the ring and move up. So we said, okay, then we have to go back to talk with phase group to modify the tip, and that can take half a year to do that. And next day he come back, he said, I found a way to do it. How does he do that? He said, I dip this substrate into the LD trough, so I get one layer. And I dip again, I get two layers. When I get two layers, the upper surface become hydrophilic. When it become hydrophilic, and all these molecules can penetrate and can make the upper ring move up and down. And he did that, he measured as a change of intensity. So proves the ring really moves even if you put everything aligned very nicely on the surface. And from the intensity, you can calculate how much is the ring moves, and that's exactly what we expected. Okay, so we prove all the groundwork by using the LB film, and we put it onto the surface. And this molecule, which works like this, and have two tethers attached to the surface, and then if we activate, it'll move inward and it will bend the ring. Bend the cantilever beam. That's how it works. That's a measurement. Okay. You can see reduce oxidize, and this deflected the beam. Deflect the laser beam, and you can measure the deflections. And so in order to make that happen, because we need a very large force and we need to use LD film, and that means how do we work a single layer of molecule, and how do we put a single molecule and then put it onto the surface, and then going through all these things, and finally we prove it can be done. Right? 1 hour. So that's summarized. We talked about many different things in the fluid mechanics and related to biological applications, related to other type of actuator works. And in the past, we're always working for the fluid mechanics of the simple molecules, which is tough, but it's a challenge on the other side of the equation, which is the inertial is a linear or non-linear. Properties. And when we work into a different regime, especially in the micro or nano fluid mechanic area, and what the real challenge is the property of the molecule. When the property of the molecule becomes a very complex molecule, and the real challenge is the flow surface interactions, and also that's the opportunity of the flow and the surface interactions. If we handle that right, I can emit light at a different frequency. If I handle it right, I can reduce the noise and I can go to very low level, very high sensitivity biomedical detection. And there are many other examples which is in our laboratories, and how do we handle the surface property right, and the interface between fluid and solid. very hard to understand or try to model it, especially like the LB field. And how does what dislocation will trigger a solid jump and then we start the flow and make the process